Our next speaker is Ingrid Verhagen. Ingrid received her BS in geology from Grand Valley State University and her MS in geology with a chemistry minor from the University of Minnesota Duluth. She's worked for 25 years as a hydrogeologist in the closed landfill program at the MPCA. She's also worked in the Superfund program, solid waste permitting, and she currently provides business analysis training and support for MPCA data systems. Welcome, Ingrid.
Well, good morning. So that's the title of my talk, and but this could really apply to any regulated site that is going through cleanup. So we're going to briefly discuss the closed landfill program, and then I'm going to take you from the 1970s up until the present day. So what is the closed landfill program? It was created in 1994 in response to closed landfills that were contaminating groundwater, and the only legal mechanism at that time was to use the Superfund law. The problem with the Superfund law was that there was a phrase, joint and severable liability, and that meant that everybody shared in the cost. So responsible parties that had the financial means went after small businesses that hauled their waste to these closed landfills to share in the cost. There was a financial cap if you were a municipal responsible party, and the complexity of the contamination meant that cleanup might not be achieved because of that cap. So in 94, this a $2 tax was assessed on all garbage generated in Minnesota as these sites were seen as a societal problem. So let's start at the beginning. The first sanitary landfill was permitted in 1969, and this permit shown here was 2 pages long. It cited rules and statutes, but these early permits were really concerned with vector control and applying daily cover to deter bears and other vermin. Many of these sites were placed in areas that were considered unproductive, like wetlands and gravel pits, and they thought that once they were filled, they would have future productive use. So the MPCA did the best job they could at that time enforcing the permits, but, you know, in the early 1970s, there weren't a lot of staff at the MPCA. So at these sites, there were commonly maybe up to 4 groundwater monitoring wells, maybe 1 upgradient, possibly 2 side gradient, and possibly 1 down gradient. And the parameters that were are shown here that were sampled and analyzed, we now refer to those things as indicator parameters. So here's some graphs. The fuchsia is a downgradient well, and so is the yellow, and the dark blue is an upgradient well. And as you can see here, the pH almost reached 3 at this particular site. And more of these trends in the downgradient monitoring wells. So let me just point out that hindsight is a great thing when you have tools to analyze your data. Back in the 1970s, we didn't have personal computers. We didn't have a nice Excel program where we could do trend analysis and linear regression. And geologists and hydrogeologists back at that time had to think about what graph paper am I going to use to plot my data. So again, it was applying daily cover and making sure that these facilities only accepted mixed municipal waste and maybe getting them to install more monitoring wells. So then we come into the 1980s, and with the 1980s came the advent of the VOC method. This led to a large leap in the contaminant assessment. As you can see here, there were originally 26 parameters in the VOC method. It has now expanded to 68 parameters. But detection of these chemicals really depended on First, your sampling method. So if you dropped a baler down a well, you were sure to volatilize some parameters, no matter how successful you were in keeping a positive meniscus, cooling your samples, and making sure there was no cross-contamination. Well construction was another thing that was really important. If your plume was sinking as it left the site, then having a well screened at the water table might not detect these compounds. Scientific studies have shown that the holding time, especially for something like vinyl chloride, was really important. If you didn't extract it within 7 days, you were less likely to see it, depending on how long you held it. And at the beginning of the method, you could hold VOC samples for up to 14 days. And finally, improved instrumentation. So the method started out mostly with gas chromatography, but the addition of mass spectrometry really improved the reliability of the method to detect contaminants in groundwater. So that brings us to the 1988 solid waste rules. The detection of VOCs around many of these sites convinced regulators that the rules needed to be updated. With the 1988 rules, they required that mixed municipal facilities be lined because a landfill is a source that does not go away and cannot be easily removed. The lined facility meant that more stringent standards could be applied because the facility should not leak, and if there is a leak, there should be attenuation within 200 feet of the waste boundary. And facilities that could not meet these standards commonly between 1988 and the start of the closed landfill program came into the closed landfill program. So the assessment of groundwater around these sites really relied heavily on the VOC method because we had a method, these compounds were used by industry, and there were toxicological studies for these parameters. And we felt that if they weren't present, then the site probably was clean. However, as I show you here, there are 80,000 registered chemicals in the US, and we maybe have analytical methods for an order of magnitude less than that. And a lot of our analytical methods overlap between the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, SW 846, which applies to facilities. So new methods for compounds may mean that compounds are detected at these sites, but sometimes there's a lag between their detection and the promulgation of a drinking water standard for those analytes. So the closed landfill program assessed and managed the VOCs by the following standards during the 1990s. Monitoring systems were upgraded. More wells were added. The program felt that collecting a representative sample was really important. So they achieved that by installing dedicated bladder pumps in all the monitoring wells that were in the program at that time, so that they could pump at the rate of groundwater flow. The program used something called a presumptive remedy, which was installing covers that met the 1988 rules and installing gas extraction systems. This would reduce the production of leachate and would stabilize the waste by burning the decomposition gases. So operating those flares actually brought more data into the program because gas condensate was produced by those flares, and in order to manage that condensate, they had to test for things like pesticides, PCBs, VOCs, and semi-volatiles. And it was found that the program didn't see much different than what they had seen by testing the wells around the landfills for the VOCs. Subtitle D was the federal level, and the program at that time also tested for those parameters just to make sure that the preemptive remedies were working. And finally, at some of the sites that were in the program that were there were inherited groundwater gradient control systems, and the program studied attenuation for plumes that had escaped the monitoring system. The program was concerned with all the groundwater that was being pumped out with these gradient control systems, and at some sites were installing constructed wetlands to manage that extracted groundwater. All right, so this is a common trend that was occurring at many of these sites when the presumptive remedies were installed. So at this particular site, the active gas extraction system and the enhanced cover were installed in 1996. And you can see that there was a downward trend in the groundwater elevation and a downward trend in the VOC, the total VOCs detected. Now note that this graph that I'm showing you ends in 2002. It wasn't uncommon for the program to test for new parameters because we looked at subtitle D and we were testing for a lot of different things just to make sure that they weren't coming out of the waste. So in 2004, I was sent a memo alleging that fluorochemicals were disposed of at a closed landfill at which I was the project hydrogeologist. The lab that we used had just developed a method for two of the 8 chain PFCs, and you know, based on our record of sampling, I didn't really expect to find those chemicals around that particular landfill. So that led to a 5-year journey of investigating methods for removing those PFCs from groundwater, getting a clear idea of the properties of the aquifer, and installing a triple-lined system at that landfill. And I should point out that this is the only triple-lined landfill that exists in the program. So when I was showing you the 80,000 chemicals that are registered in the United States, that was one of the criteria that we used to determine that we really needed to do something to manage detections from this site, because we didn't really know if there would be a new chemical that we didn't test for that might show up in the future that could become a contaminant of concern. Other unforeseen things for the program are that the VOCs went down, but all of a sudden metals became a problem, and it was hard to determine if they were naturally occurring or whether or not they were released from the leachate coming in contact with the aquifer materials. And then, as many of you know, some of the VOCs with more toxicological studies have also dropped, and once their standard dropped, they could become a problem at these sites also. The groundwater ambient program tested at 3 landfills and found that some pharmaceutical and personal care products are detected there at the part per trillion level, but at this point there really isn't any method for removing them from groundwater. And then there's 1,4-dioxane, which the method for that was first created by the public lab that we used in the mid-2000s, and it is now being detected around a lot of closed landfills. And if it becomes a contaminant of concern, it's going to be very expensive to take that out of the groundwater. So the future challenges for the program are, will the monitoring systems be adequate when you have a suite of contaminants that flow at different rates and you have complex aquifer geology? Is there going to be a future emerging chemical of concern that we're not testing for now that a method may be developed in the future? And then remember, we were talking about those plumes that escape the site. Will vapors off-gassing from those plumes become an issue at sites around closed landfill like they are for the Superfund program. There are limited staff and limited funds to the program, and the final thing is the program has a challenge with educating the public. So we need more scientific studies. We need toxicological data that keeps up with the things that we might detect. And then we really need a public that's informed about the safe use and disposal of chemicals that they use.